This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
This may seem hard to believe if you tend to buy packaged food, but a lot of fresh groceries have been getting cheaper and cheaper. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. This may be hard to swallow for some, but the data show we are on track to see the longest stretch of low food prices in America since 1960, at least outside the troughs of various recessions. Marketplace's Adam Allington reports on how low prices can still cause strains.
You may have noticed you're spending a lot less on eggs, milk, and meat these days. That's because across the country, there's an oversupply of these basic items, hurting profits for farmers.
Everybody has to make a little bit of money to keep the chain going.
Jack Baker is a cattle breeder from western Missouri. He says right now the on-the-hoof price of beef is down about 50%, which means a lot of ranchers will likely end up taking losses.
Probably it's going to be hard for people to get the cash flow to rebuy calves at a very good price.
But Phil Lempert, a food industry analyst with SupermarketGuru.com, says the current deflation could be seen as more of a price correction.
Let's not forget that probably for 3 years before it, we had the highest food prices in history.
Prices had shot way up, thanks to record droughts and a nasty outbreak of bird flu, but now production has roared back. Add to that cutthroat competition between retailers like Walmart, Aldi, and Amazon, which has driven bargain shopping to a whole new level. In Washington, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Staying with the marketplace of food here, Whole Foods, famous for very fine goods at some very upscale prices, is opening a store today in a low-income Chicago neighborhood. Inglewood residents have struggled with foreclosures, unemployment, and violence. It is also a food desert. That's an area where there's more fast food and junk food available than fresh, healthier stuff. From Chicago, WBEZ's Natalie Moore looks at the supermarket's plans.
Whole Foods employees put the finishing touches on the new Southside Inglewood store. Local residents were key in the design of the store. They voted on a mural by a local artist. They told corporate officials they wanted more hot food options. They demanded the company offer jobs to ex-offenders. The glaring question, of course, is how will residents in a place with 21% unemployment afford to shop here? Whole Foods co-CEO Walter Robb has heard all the concerns about pricing.
We got to stretch. We got to work harder. We got to price more aggressively. I mean, we have much lower costs here to operate because the rent's lower, the fixed costs are lower.
Naomi Davis is a community activist and critic of Whole Foods in Inglewood, even though she shops at the chain from time to time in other locations.
I wonder why a local fresh market purveyor wasn't targeted for that spot. I concern myself that we are not thinking about community wealth building.
The mayor's office in Whole Foods picked this location when the grocer expressed an interest in opening in an underserved Chicago neighborhood. But Rob says Inglewood residents reiterated they didn't want to have foods, a store with half the standards just because it's in a black neighborhood. For 3 years, Whole Foods engaged with Inglewood residents. The grocer is bringing 100 new jobs to the neighborhood. Glenn Fulton is president of an Inglewood community development nonprofit. He says the grocer kept its promises.
Everything that they said they were going to do, they've done. They've had regularly scheduled monthly meetings with the community.
The Inglewood Whole Foods will have cooking classes, free meeting space for community groups, and 35 Southside vendors with their products on the shelves. In Chicago, I'm Natalie Moore for Marketplace.
probably know by now that Wells Fargo Bank put pressure on its employees to sell customers on multiple services. We've also been reporting on how this cross-selling, as it's called, got out of hand, and employees ended up opening about 2 million accounts or credit lines without customers' permission. Now there's news the CEO, John Stumpf, will forfeit more than $40 million worth of his shares, and his salary is on hold pending further investigation by the board of directors. But what about that board? And are there lessons here for other companies? Frequent contributor Eric Gordon is a professor at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business and joins us from Ann Arbor. Good morning to you.
Good morning, David.
So we have the board of Wells Fargo policing this now. There's an ongoing independent investigation that the board has pushed for. So that's the board's role. Something has come up and they're trying to get to the bottom of it.
You know, as police, they've got to be sort of the laziest, most overpaid cops ever.
Do you think that the board should have been, what shall we say, a little bit more proactive? So perhaps this may never have happened?
You know, I think, you know, trying to clean up the mess isn't enough. I think you're supposed to be monitoring the risk, what's going on at the company, and preventing this from happening, or at least catching it right when it starts.
Well, maybe some board members just didn't know.
It's possible they didn't know. But it's their job to make due inquiries. It's their job to know something this big. This wasn't some rogue trader in an office out, you know, 3,000 miles away. This is thousands of employees doing something day after day.
Well, if Wells Fargo shareholders have an issue with board performance, I suppose they could vote out some of the board.
Yeah, but, you know, when was the last time we actually saw board members voted out? That happens when an activist investor shows up. But typically, the shareholders who really control the big votes, the institutional people, the mutual funds, they support management. They support the board. You rarely see anything happen.
Eric Gordon is at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. Thank you.
My pleasure, David.
The Wells Fargo CEO, who is also chairman of the board, will return to Washington to answer more questions tomorrow, this time from the House Financial Services Committee. And the German finance ministry today denied reports it's working on some kind of bailout of Deutsche Bank. A few days ago, the German chancellor, the leader, had also said no government rescue. Deutsche Bank is feeling pressure from many sides, including U.S. regulators pressing for a $14 billion fine for Deutsche's role in the mortgage meltdown. New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.